If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Naked Professors podcast. My name's Ben Bidwell, and I'm otherwise known as the Naked Professor. And I'm here to introduce episode 2, a roundtable conversation I've had with three brilliant women. We're going into eating disorders, and the first week we set it up, we learned a little bit about the stories, we learned a little bit about what was going on for the women, how they're feeling, and then we let it float, and we're now into the middle of the conversation here. And the place that it went to is that we really got into looking at parenting and what we learned growing up and what the goal is for parents to show up in this space in the future. A really hard conversation, and there was differing views and different perspectives and think different levels of blame, which is a tough word to share, but I think we really got to a place where, listen, none of us are educated on this. No one's given a handbook as to how to handle this. There are new problems evolving in the world that we didn't experience ourselves as children, and I really don't think there is any blame, but what's great is to sit in space and hear different perspectives and allow a conversation to unfold and for us all to take our own learnings. I think what's very clear is that each eating disorder is a different story and people are impacted in different ways. So I don't think it's necessarily possible for us all to sit here and say every parent knows the answer. In fact, very few of us know the answer. But what we can do is try and provide space and try and provide space for communication and allow judgment-free space for people to really share and not to be tainted and not to be judged for what's going on, but to simply allow. Because when we allow, it provides the doors to move forward or opens the doors to move forward. So yeah, it's a difficult conversation, but it matters, and I'm really grateful for these women sharing their own understandings and their different perspectives. And we really get into this perspective of fixing and allowing people to feel and everything around that. So I hope that helps. So without further ado, reintroducing Zoe, Sharu and Hope. I hope you enjoy the conversation. It's something that I really experienced, as the youngest child and you know, in my day-to-day world, I'm more of a leader, especially as a coach. You know, I'm helping people, and as soon as I go back into my family situation, it's straight back in. You know, my brothers see me as the youngest, 7 and 9 years older, and it's so hard to break the shackles of that role. And I can imagine, this is probably not a nice thing to say, but often going back into our family environment can be a trigger to go back to past patterns.
Yeah. Yeah, big time, big time. And actually, the last time I went out to Kenya to see my mum is very much one of those women that's like, I'm just going to eat breakfast, I'm going to have lunch, and then, oh, don't need to eat dinner, great. And I sort of grew up with her going, so she would go from periods of lunchtime through to the next morning. And it was all that language, like, oh, why are you eating dinner? You had such a big lunch. It's like, because you're supposed to eat fucking dinner, and because I'm hungry, now shut up. And the last time I saw her, I started, you know, Dozer was saying to me, you haven't had any dinner. And I'm like, oh, she's not eating. And it's weird, isn't it? Like you said, we just regress to what we grew up with. And she didn't know that she was doing that damage, but she really was. It's interesting. You don't know it's happening until you're in it again.
So much of it is unconscious, isn't it? So as you know, if we're sitting in this space and we're all aware this might happen, and who knows, but maybe one day we'll all be parents, creating our own families. Is there things that we can do? Because for me, it's about, and this applies regardless to any conversation, which I think is important to say, because in this conversation, yes, sure, we're talking eating disorders, but I think it could also show up as a challenge in a different way too. I don't want to be treated for how I look. I don't want to be treated for my past behaviors. I don't want to be treated for things that people have read about me. I just want to be present with someone and have a conversation in the here and now. And that doesn't really happen if I'm, you know, we're going back into the family environment, all the stigmas are kept. So are we saying that a really healthy way to be for let's say as parents is just to be present and to treat our family in the here and now without any kind of preconceived conceptions of who they should be and where they fit in the family regime? Is that possible? Is that what we're...
I think it is possible. Shiru, do you have kids?
No. No, I don't.
Not yet, so, or not?
That's why I wasn't. I don't know. It hasn't come over me as something that I want to do. But I've also heard of people waking up at 37 or something and being like, I want to have kids yesterday. So who knows? But no, I haven't yet. And I often wonder that, like, what I would do or how I would navigate the conversation differently with the knowledge that I have. I think the good thing is, if you want to access better information and support, it does seem to be around more than it was when I was growing up. So that's good. Obviously, there's also a lot of other shit you're consuming that you weren't consuming before, which is highly problematic. So there's, you know, two sides to that. But I think certainly one thing that I noticed growing up was that it was established pretty early on which kids were good at exercise and which kids would be invested in when it came to exercise.
Do you mean like sports at school?
Yeah, sports at school, or even just like known as the active kids, the kids who were known as the active kids. And that I don't feel like I was ever introduced to exercise in any capacity other than you should probably do some of that because you're overweight. And so I think being active in general would be something that I would like to push. And I would never, if I had kids, and I would never associate it with calorie deficit or associate it with anything other than feeling good and moving around, like literally anything. And it didn't help that, yeah, the structures were not set up for the kids who were overweight, basically. You know, if you were overweight, like, find something else that you're good at. Or you could try, but it's embarrassing because you have to keep getting changed in front of other kids and like stuff doesn't fit you. And, you know, I remember going to buy a PE kit and they were like, well, she's going to have to buy like the senior school PE kit. And that's embarrassing for kids, you know, like even thinking about it now makes me sad. And so I think that's one thing. I don't know what I would do about the food. I think, I don't know yet. I'm not quite there, but I do know that exercise wise, I would massively disassociate. I mean, I would just, they have nothing to do with each other whatsoever. First and foremost, for sure, because I see how exercise has impacted my mental health and my self-esteem and my just connection with my body and ability to tell what it's doing and what's going on and whether I'm hungry and when I'm not and stuff like that. So the knock-on effect that it's had on my overall well-being is immeasurable. And I feel very, very sad about the fact that as a child, I was not able to benefit from that, probably when I needed it most, because it was only ever wrapped up with, and also people make fun of you. You know, like that's the other thing too. Like, look at her trying to jump on a whatever or fall off a whatever or fit in a whatever. So it's like, you know, and now exercise is my absolute savior. And also our parents, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't have active parents. My dad played tennis with his friends and my mum exercised to lose weight. Like that was the only reason she was exercising. Maybe after dinner walk, but even then, you know, you strap the weights on your, there's always something that's trying to like make it about sweating or losing weight. Or those, do you remember those? I had these suits, like they look like bin liners that would make you like sweat more. You know, I had one of those when I was like 12. It's messed up.
Do you think it's a lack of education from them, Shiru? Like your parents, do you blame your parents? Because who do you have any sort of resentment towards them? What, how do you feel about
my
that?
My God, no. My parents left a war-torn country to come here. So, you know, first generation immigrants. They had bigger fish to fry than I think educate themselves on how, you know, about the patriarchy. And like now we have a different conversation, but I think at the time, no, absolutely not. And they just wanted a healthy kid. So with the information that they had and the concerns that they had, and bear in mind, my parents never pushed me to do anything. It was that I was coming home and saying, the kids are making fun of me, or I don't fit into this, or someone said this about me. Is it true? And then I wanted to change it. So what do you do as a parent? You say, well, let me see how I can help you change it, right? Because it's making my kid unhappy. So no, in fact, I think my parents were more compassionate and understanding about what I was going through than the vast majority of the conversations that I have with people. It was just a lack of knowledge. It was lack of basic knowledge. At that time, we weren't talking about exercise for mental health, were we? You exercised if you were really fit and good at exercise, or you exercised if you were in a team and you loved it and you turned up for whatever, or you exercised because you were trying to lose weight.
My fear a little bit is that for kids, is that it's, you know, with so much, so many other distractions, exercise is becoming a bit of a chore. You know, and it's almost going the other way from what you're saying, Sharu, and, you know, make exercise just something to for everyone that's accessible for play. And play is going such another direction, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a big focus in our house, actually, really is, with the kids, all of them. You know, we get them out for like a 2-hour walk every single day. We dance for fun in the kitchen, but also to move. We make it. It's not about like how great you are at kicking a ball. It's like, we're going outside to kick a ball because guess what? It makes you feel great and it's really good fun. And, you know, if you're good at it and you've got an interest in it, then brilliant. You know, hopefully you get to do it when we get back to school. But it's amazing. If I see the kids indoors a lot, and obviously we're in a lockdown, it makes me feel antsy. I want them outside in nature, breathing in fresh air. And I think, you know, if you've got that look, I'm going to make massive, massive monumental mistakes with my parenting, and who knows, I might end up screwing them up forever. But there are some certain pillars that I will put in place for them so that they know about being outside and being free to run around, and so that they know that that will give them the endorphins and that will make them feel good. And hopefully I will be able to give them an understanding about how amazing food can be and how we have to learn to, it's not our enemy, and which it was for such a long time for me, and get that, like we said, that healthy balance between putting the right things into our bodies, into their bodies, and also exercising because it's great.
I guess for me, like, I'm slightly scared of it. So yeah, like, I do want to have children, and I'm worried that I'll mess them up. I'm worried that they'll pick up on little things with me. I don't know. I guess I'm scared about it, which is probably another reason why I'm trying to really challenge and get completely better at the moment. Cause I'm like, I don't want them to see me like this. And actually the other weekend, we went for a walk down the river near where I live. And there was a girl sitting with her mum having a croissant. And I was literally just like, I saw this child and I was like, do you know what? I want to be able to do that with my daughter one day. Like, if I fancy it, I don't want to be a mum where we go and have a coffee and I don't get anything, but she gets something. Yeah, I guess for me, it's like, I'm going to hopefully try and just encourage, like Sharu, like not having it so together and so interlinked. And yeah, like focusing more on other stuff as well, I think is just really important. I think it's hard as well, because I always thought maybe I went through this phase of kind of scribbling out the calories on all the food and stuff in the house, but I don't feel like maybe that's the best thing to do because that draws more attention to it. But just, I guess, neutralizing food maybe is the way forward. I don't know. The other day I said to my other half, I was like, how do you know how much food to feed a child when sometimes I don't even know how much food to feed myself? And I'm like, this is ridiculous. But I feel like children just know, like they can eat intuitively, like maybe we can't.
You put the right things in front of them and they will take a range of it. And it's a very up and down journey, actually. And actually, I think at the beginning of me becoming a mother, it'd be interesting to see anybody listening if they're nodding their heads right now, because I felt like I was putting my own issues around food onto my daughter's baby plate. And I was obsessed with her getting the right amount of food in, so much so that, and I'm ashamed to admit this, but I would tickle her under the armpit so she would laugh so I could spoon feed her. And I was like, my friend was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, well, you know, she hasn't eaten enough of this and she needs to get a sweet potato in. And she was like, you can't do that. Like, that's not fun for her. She's laughing. Don't shove food in her face. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And at that point I thought, this is about me. This is not about her. So at that point I started putting food. And at that point I let her dictate what she was going to eat. And we did baby led weaning and it worked so much better because it wasn't me going, you need to, because I was so paranoid about her being too, I didn't want her not to have the right nutrients because I knew that for so long I wasn't getting the right nutrients. Do you see? It was really weird. But I hope no one knows what they're doing as a parent anyway, so don't worry about all of that stuff. We haven't got a clue what we're doing.
I think it's such a powerful conversation. I had a conversation with a friend a few months ago, and he talked about his friend's 14-year-old daughter that had developed an eating disorder during lockdown. Before that, you know, there was no signs of anything. It was all perfect. It must be incredibly hard as a parent, carrying blame, wondering if you could have done things differently. Should I have read this book, or could I have done that, or should I have listened to this? And I really do think the reality is that we're going to make mistakes. You know, there is no such thing as reading the textbook of parenting and then bingo, this is how you play it all out and everything will be perfect. You know, my mum gave me so much love that I was scared to fail, because she didn't want me to fail. She's loved me so much. Don't try and do that, because I don't want you to experience disappointment or sadness. I'd rather just stay here. You know, you're good with me. I've got you. And that's great. And that comes from love. And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm not criticizing the slightest, but you know, who would think that coming from a place of just real love can cause problems? Like, whatever we do in any area, we're going to make mistakes. So I think, you know, hopefully it's conversations like this that can allow just people to understand and for people to sit in the space that we're all trying and things are going to happen. And it's not going to be this perfect life that everyone is presenting and that we all just go swimmingly through. It's actually being able to sit in the space, like you said at the beginning, Hope, where we go, do you know what? Actually, it's a challenge and I need to talk about it. And I want to talk about it because that's part of my healing. And if we can live in that world, then when people do have the challenges, it can be a normal conversation, just like it is, what do you need from the supermarket? Because we're human beings who are going to experience difficulties at times. That sounds like a healthy place to me.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I love where your head is at with that. I do think we have got a responsibility, though, to be able to admit when we feel like, I mean, my parents, probably like you guys, they did so much good. They did so much good. I've come from the most amazing upbringing. I'm so lucky to say that, you know, and what they've given me on one side of the coin in terms of being, you know, ambitious and driven and hopefully kind and caring side and all that, brilliant. But like, my mum has never taken sort of responsibility for the other side. And I think one thing that I will say is that you have to be accountable for your actions. We have to grow, we have to learn, and we have to, especially when we're raising our children, to be aware that what we do, they will take up like a sponge, you know. And so for me, that is a big responsibility. I don't want to be thinking about that so much that I can't have fun with them, and I, you know, I can't just be silly and da da da. But I also know that they might come to me when they're older and be like, what you did there did this, and I will have to take a good hard look at myself, and I'm willing to do that.
I think I do, yeah, I agree with that. And I think obviously I'm not a mum yet, but looking at my relationship with my mum, particularly in relation to kind of like the food and stuff, she really, when I was diagnosed at the age of 17, I had like hidden my anorexia for kind of 4 years at that point. And I remember that my mum just felt awful about the fact she hadn't noticed. And she brought loads of books to try and understand it and educate herself. But after I ended up spending a year in hospital, and throughout that whole year, we didn't actually really speak much because I was so angry at her. I was angry at the situation. I really just really struggled with that relationship, actually. And I think one of the reasons for that was pre getting admitted to treatment, I was an outpatient, and when I was an outpatient, my mum was trying to be really controlling and really fixing, which is exactly what any mother, any parent, pretty much any friend would do in that situation. But actually it didn't work. And I was like, no, I don't want that. Stop fixing, stop interfering. But actually what it has meant is kind of since then, we're obviously like much closer now, we get on really well about stuff. But when I relapsed kind of back in 2016, she didn't do that. She actually kind of was we had a direct conversation about it. She then was like, what are you doing? What's your plan of action to tackle this? And actually even this time round, like I'm not relapsing, I'm not in the midst of that, but just pushing myself to that final bit, I know that I've obviously spoken to my mum and my older sister and my other half about it, and actually been like, do you know what, guys? Like, I don't want you to fix it. I want to own this on my own. And I think you, as an individual, when you've had an eating disorder, you have to take responsibility and be honest with yourself, but set those boundaries within that. But then obviously looking at my mum, basically what the long-winded thing I'm trying to say is my mum, I guess, has had to learn to navigate how to best support me moving forward. And I think that's not just a shift from being a child to an adult, but actually it's just the shift that actually I think is really important for all parents to realise.
Yeah, I love that from you, Hope. And I think you go through such a journey with the relationship that you have and how you feel about, you know, your parents during your illness. And actually maybe you start off with anger and then there's a bit of resentment in there and then there's acceptance. And then it's like, actually, you can't fix me. I've got to do this. It's really interesting, that journey, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think as well, for me, the other layer at the moment is navigating that even with like having someone that I live with. And obviously he really loves me. He really cares about me. But actually at the same time, I don't want to feel like he's my carer, because he's not my carer. So I don't know if that makes sense. I think, again, it's like you have to navigate all of these other situations, and even situations where you're with your friends, where you have to have a conversation about it and explain to them maybe where you're at times, explain what support you might need in moments and things like that. And that will change throughout recovery. I know when I first started kind of going out for dinners and stuff with people, I always wanted to go to exactly the same restaurant. I'd always want to go out for brunch because it was just an easy meal for me. And actually my friends had to navigate firstly doing that, but then also navigating actually over the last couple of years where when I text, actually it's quite annoying sometimes, when I text my best friend Nikki and she's cooking dinner, I'm always like, oh, what are you cooking tonight? Like, tell me what you're cooking. And she's like, oh, I haven't decided yet. Or I'm just going to do like a Mexican meal. And then I'm like, oh, what's Mexican? Like, what does that mean? And she's like, you don't need to know. And I think it's, again, your friends then being able to also be a bit more accountable and honest as well with everything. It's difficult. And I think that's what you were saying at the start, Ben. It's like, actually, we need to own those conversations and be direct and have them more, because otherwise we're all just going to shy away and just not talk about it.
I think this conversation around fixing is a really interesting one, because it feels like it's a human instinct. You know, and if someone says, I'm struggling a bit, particularly us men, you know, we really want to fix. And a massive part of my journey is actually learning that the fixing is just is not allowing, but accepting and providing space to just sit and listen. And let's not try and plaster over these cracks. Let's just really like allow this, and for us to accept that, again, challenges are part of the process. And let me just sit and hear you. I know from my experiences that if I have a challenge in some capacity, let's say I have a bad day, you know, and I say to someone, oh yeah, bit of a shit day, whatever, you know, naturally we have them. And someone's like, oh God, you know, tell me what happened. And we can do this. We can sort that out. And I'm like, no, I don't need, like, life is on track. Like, I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm just expressing that this is what's going on. And all I really wanted to do is just be heard and for us to have a conversation. And there's every chance tomorrow I'm going to wake up in a new space if you can just let me share that. But it's the whole fixing takes you away from, it makes it a problem. You know, it's like, okay, now we've got to do this and this and this and this. And you're like, oh God, yeah, I'm not meant to feel like this. You're so right. I'm going to try and do all this. And that's not sitting with the emotion. That's not allowing. And of course, when things get to a deeper situation, like we're talking now,
yeah,
I don't think it's necessarily a case of just sitting and allowing. But it might be the start, you know, like we got back to the beginning of your what you said, Hope. Owning where we're at is a big part of the recovery. And if we're not allowing someone to own where they're at because when they own it, they feel like everyone's going to try and fix them and throw everything at them, and they don't want to have to go on that journey. That's all quite a lot to take on. It's like, actually, if we're just allowing, it's fine. Let's just allow space for whatever you feel to be okay, and we can talk about it. Perhaps that might open the door to then recognizing there is a problem, but that problem is okay and we'll work together.
I think in defense of the people who don't know that, we are still in a kind of a bubble and things have moved pretty quickly. And it's a natural inclination when someone you care about comes to you with a problem to want to solve it for them. So like we are in a, I think it's important to kind of remember that we're all people who've gone through the process of learning, getting to know ourselves better, understanding how to communicate with people who you want to feel honest and hold space. And even that term, like we've come, you know, leaps and bounds. There are still, you know, I forget there are still people who think counseling is indulgent because of the bubble that I'm in. But even what you're saying there, you know, when we talk about, is it the parents' fault? I mean, fault, sure, yeah, but fault kind of gets a bad rap because at that point, who else really are you looking at to give you a guidance as to who you are and how the world works? You know, invariably it'll fall on your parents. And I think a lot, like even now, if you went to the average parent who hadn't done this work and wasn't interested in personal development, said if your kid comes to you with a problem, I don't think it would, I'm not a parent, but I feel like it wouldn't feel natural to be like, go on, just tell me all this stuff that's breaking my heart and I'm just going to sit here and do absolutely nothing about it. That's a lot. And I think it's, we like, you know, we throw around this stuff because we know it and we know it to be true and we're coaching and talking to people and going straight into no small talk and all this stuff. The vast majority of society does not. And so I think that's important too, to give those people a break to some extent too. Like, how are they supposed to have come across that information? And it's changed so quickly. You know, even when I was growing up 20 years ago, counseling was like this super remedial, serious, what's gone wrong in your life? Now it's like having a PT. So, I mean, it's important to kind of remember the times have changed massively and very quickly, which is great. But I think the expectation on people, parents, etc., to know what to do then especially is, I think we need to be fair that where, how else would they have come from?
I'm with you 100% sure, of course. And I don't mean for what I say to sound like there is blame and that it's not okay for people to be trying to fix. Because of course it's a natural instinct, but I do feel that this is something that's within us all and it's possible to educate. We can all learn. You know, I was an ultimate fixer as a guy in a relationship with a girl. If she had an emotion and it was a negative one, like the goal was to get rid of that negative emotion. And I now realize that actually they just wanted to express it and just sit there and it's okay, because I experienced that now too. And that's something I've learned. And I think that all of us, and I'm in the process of speaking to my mum about it, actually, because I've created a platform called Heartspace, which is about allowing people to just share what they feel, and all emotions are welcome. And the majority of people are part of my community, and they're on board with my message. And when people do share a challenge that day, so I'm not feeling so great, this is what's going on, most of the people just send lots of love, and that's, you know, it's tough right now. I'm sorry, I'm sending you loads of love. But my mum always comes in and go, oh, like tomorrow's going to be a better day. And you know, go to the beach and get some fresh air and spend some time here and do all this and da 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 da. And I know it comes from a beautiful place of love, but I have to say to my mum, in this space, we're just allowing. We're really allowing. And it's hard because she thinks I'm being horrible. She's like, I'm trying to.
Yeah.
She's coming from a beautiful place and she doesn't get it. And she thinks I'm being cruel to her. But I do think this is an important education in society, that it's not going to be a great day every day, and people should be allowed to have challenges and to have a bad day, and for us not need to fix that, and for us not to demonize it, and just to learn.
I think one of the issues there, though, and I come across this a lot writing about self-kindness, is when kindness and discomfort are the same thing, that can seem really counterintuitive too, right? So if you're making changes, kind of like Hope was saying earlier about putting down boundaries or communicating, that stuff is not easy. It's really uncomfortable. So with this constant stuff around, be kind to yourself, give yourself whatever you need, etc., that does not necessarily mean in the short term, do what makes you feel most comfortable right now. And that's a really difficult thing, I think, especially when you care about someone. It's going to, of course, you're going to want their discomfort to finish as quickly as possible. You want that to wrap that up so that they're happy. And sometimes I guess we deprive people or ourselves of the realization that we will self-regulate and actually everything will be okay and that it will be a temporary state, and that discomfort is just synonymous with change. That must be really hard to navigate as well for a lot of people, especially with their kids, to see your child in discomfort and to not want to relieve that or remedy that, or to not remedy that. It must be very, very hard indeed.
You've got to stick close to them, though. You've got to stick by them. You've got to be there. You can't. It's not really about you in that moment. It's more about the person that's going through the pain, isn't it? Whereas I think, you know, for whatever reason, we put a lot of pressure on those people. Obviously, there are our sort of shining, guiding light, aren't they, to never get it wrong and to sacrifice their own stuff for you still, even if you're an adult. And maybe that's not fair either. It's very hard. It's such a delicate subject. And, you know, even sort of having the discussion now, like navigating it still now is tricky to sort of talk about. I mean, I think we're doing a good job, but you know, for them, like you said, Sharu, they don't have any education around it, and suddenly their child is suffering in the way they are. Their immediate reaction is to be like, how can I help? How can I fix?
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I wrote my book about weight loss based on my experience, and then I had to kind of go and educate myself. And I did not believe it, but I never associated myself with having an eating disorder. And then I wrote the book, and loads of people messaged me being like, I had the same eating disorder you had. And I was like, oh, I suppose I should go look up this eating disorder, like, you know, and then go find out about it. So if I'm learning as we go, then, and I've had to seek it out for the sake of my day-to-day well-being, we can't expect other people to have educated themselves to this degree on such a ever-changing, contentious, sensitive, triggering, political issue.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you're saying. And I think, obviously, for me, like, I've had time to do a lot of work on myself, and I guess learning to, I guess, do the therapy and treatment and stuff like that, like actually learning to navigate these conversations better. But I guess firstly, like, I still get it wrong the whole time. I know, particularly with my little sister, like when she has a problem, I jump straight in, and Molly will message me and be like, please don't fix this. I'm just having a moment. I just need to tell you what's going on. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'll back off a little bit. But I'm in the past, I have, even in the last couple of months, I've jumped in, I've tried to fix that situation. And I know I do that. And I think the boundary setting as well, like, I probably do make it sound really, really easy, but it's really uncomfortable. And I know where I'm at now with things, I still find it hard to do, particularly with certain individuals in my life. And even in lockdown, I think it's been hard to navigate that, particularly over the summer when stuff kind of opened up a little bit more in London, and trying to navigate actually where I was at mentally, like what I need, whilst respecting what other people wanted and things like that. And I'm not great at it. And I think sometimes I still have to put myself in situations that are terrible for my mental health and very triggering. But actually just realizing that, I think probably for me helps a little bit to then feel a bit better about it. But I guess as well, like on the kind of fixing factor, something that I've started doing, and again, this is after years and years of years of getting cross and frustrated when people try and fix me, is actually when I send a message to someone kind of venting about something, or when I'm having a bad day, I will kind of preempt the message with, I don't want a solution to this. I don't want to be fixed. And then at moments I'm like, actually, I do want a solution to this. Like, what would you do in this situation? So I'm trying to like frame that a bit better. And I think as well, like what Sheree said about the discomfort, was actually, I guess, being an adult, maybe, and or maybe it's the therapy and the work I do and kind of all the research and reading around stuff I do. Actually, I do also now know that when I'm in that place of discomfort, I'm in the space where I can process it and sit with it. And I guess even on Monday night, like, it was horrible and I hated it, but I knew that I guess I was confident in myself that actually
you were going to come out.
And I feel crappy and sucky for that evening, but I knew by the next morning I'd maybe feel okay, maybe I wouldn't. But if I didn't feel okay, I knew that I wasn't gonna punish myself or do something restrictive or anything like that. But I think it's practice, and it's being able to educate yourself within that, which obviously we're not expecting everyone to do.
So there we go. I think it's very clear for me listening back, there's no one size fits all in this. There's different opinions, there's different ways, there's different understandings, there's different perspectives, everyone's journey is different, everyone's parents are different. Everyone's ways of showing love is different. For me, what's great is to just allow the conversation. And I'm really grateful for all the women to just share their own truths and share their story and share their experiences without it needing to be right or wrong, but just to share what's inside of them. So I'm really grateful for that. Next week, we come back with a final part to this conversation. And we did reach a bit of a, I don't want to say conclusion, because that's not right, but we did, certainly in my mind anyway, we did come to a place that brings the conversation to a really nice natural end and brings a bit of, I don't know, a bit of whatever you want to take from it. But yeah, it's a really nice way for the conversation to end, in my opinion. So if you're interested and you're drawn to what you've heard so far, then next week we'll give you a nice conclusion to this whole conversation around eating disorders. Thank you. I'm grateful. I've had some really interesting, really, really beautiful feedback. We've also had some feedback about how amazing it would be to hear from men around this, because as we all know, this is not a female problem. This is a human problem, or challenge, actually. Problem is the wrong word, challenge. So I'm really pleased to say that we are going to have a man sharing the week after next. I'm excited for that. But for now, thank you so much. Any support, any sharing that you can do would be great. These conversations matter. It's my honor to sit in them. But yeah, predominantly, thank you very much for sharing. And we hope to see you next week for an end to this really important, meaningful conversation.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.